Hi everyone, this is Jonathan Corey and Julian from Procurify. This is the first edition actually of our Precursive Perspective working title, where I'm delighted to welcome Julian from Procurify. Say hello, Julian.
Hi there, Jonathan. So my name is Julian. I work at a company called Procurify, based out in Vancouver, BC in Canada. So glad to be along today.
Yeah, thanks very much indeed for joining us. As we can see, we're both working from home, slightly different locations. You're in your kitchen, I'm in the roof, is that right?
Absolutely, yes. Kitchen's the place to be.
Good stuff. Well, listen, thanks ever so much for joining us. So the idea of these conversations is really we're building out, I think, a series of pieces for our customer community to really help them navigate some very uncertain times. And we're trying to bring together practitioners who are leaders in their field and who are doing imaginative things to really get better at delivering value for their customers and to help them as businesses to grow relationships with customers, retain customers, and deliver customer success at this time. So during today's conversation, we're going to go through a few different topics, but let's just begin with maybe if you could give us, Julian, a bit of background to Procurify to begin with, and then perhaps your role at the business.
Sure. Yeah. Well, Procurify is a software company. We produce a solution under the heading really of spend management. So what we do for companies is allow them to take control of the way that they spend their money. And really we focus on organizations who've got some kind of distributed requirement for spending. So for example, organizations who've got distributed offices where they want to defer the ability to spend money to those offices, or they've got people who are based in the field engineers, for example, or they've got traveling people involved in selling. So any organization who's got some kind of distributed spend, but they also want to take control centrally. So they want to have things such as approval workflows, processes that allow people to go through a purchasing process, people who can purchase things but only from approved suppliers, and all of that brought back centrally for almost real-time reporting, a comparison against budget, and integration into their finance systems, so tools such as NetSuite and QuickBooks. So yeah, we're in the spend management area. What I do there is that I run what's called our revenue operations team, which is building the processes and systems and analytics that go across our go-to-market teams, which includes our marketing arm, the selling arm, and our customer success and customer service departments as well. So yeah, so that's a little bit about the company and what I do there, Jonathan.
Cool. So the nodal point for growth, customer success, sales, and all of the above, right?
We bring them all together.
Yeah, cool. All right, great. And so, but prior to Procurify then, a little bit about your career history, because you've been doing revenue operations for a while now. You've obviously, our businesses, you and our company have worked together for a number of years, and you've worked at some pretty cool and successful SaaS businesses in the past as well.
Yeah, I've been working in the tech industry for about 25, 30 years, going from working with companies in the early stage of CRM, even before Salesforce. I worked for a company called Pivotal for many years in their sales operations and revenue operations team. I then moved to a company called Hootsuite, who many of you may be aware of in the social area. I helped develop their revenue operations as they grew from a small operation to the size that they are today. I then moved on to another tech company called Vidyard, who are in the video for business area, and helped
customer of ours.
Absolutely, I've worked with TaskFeed there for a couple of years, and before moving on to a local company in Vancouver, Procurify, right now. So yes, I've been heavily involved in sales operations, revenue operations, mostly in the tech area for more years than I can care to mention.
All right, cool. A little bit more experience than me then, which is good. So cool. So I think obviously we're all working in a very different world now. We're all living in a very different world. And it's one that I think, you know, both personally and professionally, people, you know, are taking and need to take very seriously. It would be just in terms of a bit of backdrop. How has the COVID-19 situation, just to begin with, how has this impacted, you know, the way that you guys run the business internally? Not the customer piece yet, but just how are things going there for you guys internally with regards to the team and the impact and what you guys are doing to respond?
Yeah, internally, there's not been a great change in the way we serve our customers. We really are a smallish organization, 125 people, mostly focused in originally in just the one office in Vancouver. So we didn't have a distributed environment. We don't have people who are field based. We don't have remote offices. We don't have international operations. So the switch to working from home for all of our folks has not actually been that difficult in terms of just the pure ability to do the job. Of course, the major changes are more around how do people actually survive in that kind of environment? How can they thrive when their workplace is their home? And how do we bring people together through communications and through using various interesting ways of engaging people as a team? So really, most of the problems are more to do with bringing people together and working effectively, rather than the ability to do the daily tasks in the job, such as selling or running a marketing campaign. Obviously, a few of the things that we would have done, such as events, or as everybody knows, most of those now online, but we were doing webinars anyway. So it's just amplifying things that we were doing. So not a lot of change, particularly for our organization. We switched fairly easily to remote work, even for engineers. And we were already going down that route anyway. We were experimenting with more remote work. We were already doing work from home Wednesdays. We already experimented with remote teams on the engineering team and to see how they could cope. And so generally it's been a pretty good experience for us so far.
Yeah. I was talking to another customer earlier today, to their CTO, and he was saying, you know, we're having to try and get people to work less because, you know, a lot of their analysts, for example, in this particular business are, you know, working all hours because they're at home and there isn't a lot else to do. So it's throwing up some interesting, new things that perhaps were unexpected. I think many businesses are learning just it is, you know, relatively straightforward to enable this remote working, right? In some instances, not in all. So, okay, cool. And then as you think about kind of like the changes in demand that you're seeing, I mean, naturally, many of our customers, like you guys, we serve companies across different industries. What are you seeing in terms of like customer demand and maybe spikes in demand in certain places or tailing off in others? Give us some perspective there.
Yeah, sure. It's we serve an awful lot of different sectors and an awful lot of different geographies as well. What we found right now is that there are some sectors that are completely dead. There are some sectors that we would have served before and have been an area in which we have a lot of good, successful customers, such as retail, where the demand for our solution has fallen off. But there are other sectors in which it's actually growing. And this is mostly in areas where you'd expect to see growth. Think things such as e-commerce, logistics and warehousing for some sectors. Mm-hmm. Things such as education and healthcare are actually holding up very, very well right now. If you're servicing biotech, it's a very good area to be in. So we're seeing it patchy. The biggest thing that we're seeing, though, is not necessarily related to the sector, but it's dependent on how those organizations work. If those organizations are working in this distributed way and they're introducing more home-based people, we're seeing a big demand for our product, where organizations feel that they need to take control over the way that they spend their money in a situation where not everybody is in the office anymore. And they can't just come around and knock on the finance team's door and say, hey, can somebody sign this this approval for me? Or, hey, can somebody pay this invoice for me? No, that doesn't work anymore. So we're seeing demand in some areas. The other thing we're seeing issues with is getting hold of our existing customers when people have been furloughed, people have been laid off. So a lot of the people who we service are just not around.
Yeah, I mean, I think those changes in demand like can happen really quickly. I mean, I think there's been a period of adjustment and just the disruption of everyone going into a remote working environment. I mean, you mentioned the example of companies like having to buy more stuff to enable their staff to work from home. I mean, one of our customers is a large enterprise software company, and the procurement team was saying, yeah, really, really sorry that we haven't got back to you about your contract, which we're renewing, but we were having to buy 3,000 laptops for people all to work at home for a particular business unit. And you're like, well, yeah, there are there are some larger problems out there than perhaps our renewal contract. Okay, well, that's useful to understand. And so when you're seeing in the industries where you are seeing that kind of that pull through, are you then, you know, is it a case of you're having to deliver work faster, or is it a case of it's the same type of work delivered in a different way? Are there different dynamics to the way that the work is taking place at all?
Yeah, we've seen a number of different scenarios. One scenario is where we just can't do the work because the customers are not around anymore. Maybe it's a situation where, as I said, they may have laid people off and they just don't have the people to go through things like user acceptance testing. Right. There are no end users to train.
Right.
So in those circumstances, we're having to defer projects. Yeah. On other projects, we're finding that we need to accelerate, because they suddenly have got an urgent need for something to happen more quickly. So for example, it would be, hey, we've suddenly got a larger number of home workers. We need to get our solution in place faster than we were doing before. So we need to accelerate those projects. And on others, it's very fluid and it's moving from week to week. We'll find that, okay, there may be some people around, but some people are not. Maybe there's some other issue which is coming up, as you mentioned, which is actually taking some of their resources away. So they're still willing to go ahead with the project, but there are delays being introduced for various reasons that we need to be able to cope with. So we're really seeing those three different types of environments in the way that we bring our customers on board.
Okay. That's interesting as well. Now, if you take a step back and look at kind of the broader role of you know, customer success, for example. Now you're sitting across sales, you're seeing what's happening in CS, you're bridging the gap between the two. I think there's a pretty relentless focus on customer success for most organizations right now as they think about the need to retain and grow if they can, or in some cases simply just defend what they have. But as you take a step back and think about kind of the role of customer success, how would you describe it at this time? What do you think its importance is at the moment?
Well, when we look at our business, and it very much depends on the stage that your business is and what its growth trajectory is, that right now we get more revenue from our existing customers than we get from new customers. It's just the way that the SaaS model works after you've been around for a few years. Yeah. And so clearly that means that small percentage changes in things such as churn rates and our ability to expand to our existing customers has a much bigger effect on our overall cash position and financial position. So of course, what we really want to make sure we do is get as much cash in as possible and make sure that our runway as a relatively early stage company is lengthening. So clearly the focus on keeping your customers and doing whatever you can to keep your customers is our prime goal right now. We've almost taken the approach that sales, even if our sales drop through the floor, it doesn't make an immediate impact on our financial situation. It will have a longer term effect, but in the short term, it doesn't. So we're really focusing on customer success, but then we're also working on our marketing team to ensure that the interest engine that we're seeing out there right now, we're seeing a lot of people with interest in controlling their spend and putting in our type of solution, but they're not necessarily going to buy right now. So we're putting a lot of effort into nurturing that. So we end up with a pent up demand situation. And hopefully then as things start to release, we've got a whole pool of people who'll be able to come in. So we're really focusing our efforts on customer success primarily. Absolutely. Yep. We have to shore up the business. And for those customers where we can offer something creative for them, then we're doing that. So we're pulling out all the stops on customer success, but also focusing on marketing, on creating that demand that hopefully will then feed our future revenues. So what it's doing for our customer success team though is putting unprecedented demands on them, because suddenly they are under the microscope and they have to be contacting every customer as often as possible. Yeah. And walking through exactly what that customer is going through right now and understanding how are we going to be able to help that customer get through this if at all. So it's unprecedented demand really on the customer success team today.
I think that idea that you're building that long-term asset, right, in terms of just going back to the nurturing piece, I think, you know, the importance of customer success in making sure that you know, as a brand, you've got a great reputation in the marketplace, even if you can't help the customer right now, you know, if you're able to put them in a better position for the future, however you're able to achieve that, that longer term trust that you build up is so important. And I think being able to build up like a, you know, a pool of customers, even if they're not paying you very much, or they're on trials, or they're doing something with you that that may not be revenue generating in the first instance, but gives you that that long-term asset, right? That long-term asset that you can work with and develop over time is going to be kind of fundamental to how people come out of this if and when the recovery takes place.
Yeah, what we're looking for right now is that because we've got an application that is tracking how much money people are spending and how many transactions they're putting through our platform, it's very clear to us when people are getting value. So what we're concentrating on right now with our customer success team is presenting that information to the customer to say, hey, look at how your spend is going. We can help you analyze where you're actually spending, and we can benchmark you against other organizations to see how you're doing and give you some best practices. And that is then turning into case studies, which we can then use for generating more demand by giving very specific examples of organizations, how much money they're spending and how much control they're having over that spend during this particular time. And that's resonating very, very well in terms of being able to bring in new customers as well. So customer success is not just helping to shore up our existing customers, it's helping to develop the tools and resources that we need to bring new customers in through compelling arguments about how we can help organizations reduce their spend effectively.
Yeah, well, it makes a lot more sense now in many ways, your value proposition, Julian, because fundamentally, if you're not generating as much new business and you as a business, people need to reduce their costs and get on top of their spend, there actually isn't a better time to be investing in that type of technology than right now. Because fundamentally, like, you know, otherwise companies are either going to run out of cash, right? Or their margins are going to take a hammering in the short term. So it makes a lot of sense to, you know, the area that you're in. When you look at that customer journey, right? And now obviously we do a lot of work in the customer onboarding space. How important have you found both historically, but also in recent times, the importance of customer onboarding to that overall customer success journey? How important is it?
Well, this when I joined Procurify, getting on for a year ago, it became clear to me that this was one of the major problems within the organization, which was the time to value that our customers had. Okay. That we were very good at bringing in customers through the door, but then they weren't having a great experience at getting value from their investment. Right. And we all know that the expectation of anybody who is buying a software as a service solution is that they should be able to be generating something useful out of that investment very, very early on. They should be able to get up and running within days. Mm-hmm. What we're seeing, though, is that was not the case. Because we have inconsistent ways of setting the expectations with the customers. We didn't have ways of templating the ways that different clients should be onboarded. We got no way of backing that up with resources that would help the customer through the journey. And so we were seeing some projects for onboarding just going on and on and on, never really ending. And of course, what happens is that those customers are going to leave you. They're going to either just decline to renew their contract, or they'll have a bad experience and stop using the product. So it's absolutely essential. And there's a direct correlation between the onboarding time and the levels of churn within our organization. Absolutely. Yep. So the customer journey between purchasing a solution and getting value from the solution, which is not necessarily the same as going live, getting value from the solution is absolutely essential. So we're trying to contract that down right now.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? If you're talking about, you know, as you pointed out earlier, percentage points and changes and the impact that has on the overall performance of the business. So percentage changes in churn, if you run 10 projects and five of them take much longer than they should and those customers don't buy any more from you, then that becomes a very big issue, both in the short term and the long term. Did you have any data in the business that you're happy to talk about, or any data from previous experiences in other companies about like the link between, you talked about the link between time to value and year one churn. Have you seen any data around actually what the financial impact is? Like, you know, you see X percentage more churn? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were looking at how long it takes to onboard. And one of the problems we had was we didn't know. This is one of the first things. In many circumstances, we didn't know because nobody was recording. When did we start working with this customer, and when have they gone live, and when did we consider onboarded? That we didn't have the data, so it was very hard. Or we knew that our churn levels were extraordinarily high.
Right.
And when we looked at when customers were churning, a vast majority were churning in year one, and right. that's nearly always as a correlated to the amount of time that customers were taking to onboard. So what was happening was that we found that the customers who could onboard quickly, they were the people who were staying. The people who were going, you'd say, well, we never actually fully onboarded them. They never really went live.
Yeah.
So we did two things. One was starting to track, going back, finding the information, going to discover what exactly those numbers look like. Then working out, is this actually correlated with churn? And the definite answer was yes. Over and above anything else, over and above the demographics, over and above the size of the organization, over and above the type of integrations that they wanted, no. The number one was, how long do we actually take to get these people onboarded? So obviously we started measuring, and then we started then developing, well, what should the onboarding actually look like? And so, because we knew that the faster we onboard, the more likely they are to stay, we started developing templated onboarding processes that we could then apply to say, okay, for this type of customer with this type of need, this is what the onboarding should look like, and this is how long it should take.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And is the onboarding journey, is that managed by the CSM, or is it managed by a specialist team and then handed over to CSM? Give us a little bit of background to the org structure
we have a CSM team. What happens is that after the sale has been made, well, in fact, as the sale is approaching the end of its sales cycle, we'd introduce the customer success manager into the program. We also have a team of what we call our PSEs, our professional services consultants, and their role is to actually carry out the onboarding process itself. So the customer success manager is managing the account and the relationship with that organization.
Right.
But our PSCs are then given the task of, you have to now go and implement this. And so those two teams work hand in hand. So what happens is that as soon as a new business sale is made, we hand that over to the PSC team. The PSC team will all be aware of that and will understand what the needs are. And according to what the solutions that they bought, they would then apply a different type of onboarding program. It might be what we call our quick launch program, which is get up and running within 3 weeks. Or if they've got some very complex integration requirements, then it may be, well, we actually need to create a customized program with that customer. And what we'll do is we'll actually develop a program and a template for that customer as a one-off. And there's various gradations in between. So that's how the thing is now operating, is that every customer is assigned to a particular type of onboarding program where we know how long that thing should take. And what we're now doing, of course, is measuring, well, how long is it actually taking? So we're now starting to be able to do variances to work out, well, actually, are we delivering? So the key is to deliver to meet the customer expectations. If the customer is expecting, we think it's going to take 3 months to go live with this because we've got some complex customization that we want here, and you meet it with 3 months, then fine. Yeah. They will consider that a success. But if their expectation is 3 weeks and we take 3 months, then that's not a success. So this is the stage that we're at now, is now we've developed these programs, is, well, are we actually delivering to our expectations here? Are we meeting the customer expectations?
Okay, cool. So in terms of just the tech stack that you use, so you've got Salesforce as a platform and you're using that for your commercial activities and sales, for example. And then you've got TaskFeed from Precursive as your onboarding tool, and then you've got Gainsight as your CS tool. Is that right? Is that the
flow? Yeah, correct. Yes. Yeah. Gainsight is sitting on the top of a number of applications, bringing together information that would help the customer success team. But that's primarily used by the customer success team to develop the calls to action, the CTAs, and to get views into the customer health dashboard. As you rightly say, then the TaskFeed solution from Precursive is acting really as our onboarding tool. It's used by the professional services consultants to set up and track what they're doing on the project. But crucially, that information is then feeding back into our other tools like Salesforce and Gainsight, so that the rest of the organization can have visibility into things that are happening, such as, is this project under risk? Is this being delivered on time? What's the customer sentiment? How is this matching to their usage? So as we start to bring them on board, how is their usage increasing? So we're using that information that's coming from TaskFeed within Gainsight and within Salesforce to power other decision making.
Okay. And you've mentioned this phrase that obviously we use and you use as well, this idea of templatizing the work, right? Templatizing that onboarding experience. So how many different flavors are there of work that you would deliver in that professional services piece or that onboarding phase? How many different ways can it be delivered?
We've got four basic ways of doing this. We're revising them actually as time goes on, but we've really got four. And we have a very simple basic, what we call a quick launch program, which we think we can, that if all goes well, can be delivered within a week, depending on what the needs are. We've then got kind of stepping up through a kind of standard onboarding where they've got maybe some more complex requirements. And then depending on the integration needs, we have templates that are based on, okay, if you've got NetSuite, this is probably what it looks like. If you've got QuickBooks Online, this is probably what it looks like. So we've got four basic templates. But then, of course, we can then vary those if there's very specific customer needs that are specced out by the professional services consultant. So they can take that template and then adjust it for that customer if they've got specific requirements.
Okay, cool. I mean, we like to think of them as playbooks, right? So it's a playbook for customer onboarding with a different, depending on what you've sold, you're going to spin out a plan that you can deliver against. And how would you describe, like, what's the value of, would you say, our of TaskFeed overall in this process? Kind of when you look at it and you describe it, if someone else joined the organization, how would you describe the value that it brings to the team and you?
Yeah, there's a couple of different areas. One of course is kind of the basics, which is it helps our professional services team to plan and carry out the work with their clients in an effective manner. You know, they know, what have I got to do today? What have I got to do tomorrow? Where are my projects? Which ones are the ones that are stuck? Which are the ones that I need to work on more? Which are the ones that are delayed? So just that management tool, helping the professional services team manage their day-to-day activities. That's the number one. Mm-hmm. Secondly, is then the ability for us to then improve the way that we do our onboarding. So we've done quite a lot of work in capturing information that may be of use to us to make the experience better in the future. So for example, if we're seeing things happen in the project where we're seeing delays, we're capturing the reason for those delays.
Yeah.
And that's then being looked at by the professional services director and the leadership team for customer success to say, okay, if these things are being delayed, how can we prevent that? If we find that it's a delay on the customer side, is there something that we can do to make it easier for the customer to do whatever it is that's a problem? If the delay is, for example, on our own side, on our own administration areas, or maybe it's a problem with the product, then we can go and try and fix those. So the idea is that becomes a feedback loop for us to be able to improve the onboarding. Hopefully what then happens is that we can then shorten those templates. Say, well, instead of this one taking 30 days to do, we think we can cut this down because we've identified why these things are being delayed. And now we've improved that, we can now improve this and shave some time off. So that second thing in that feedback loop to improve the onboarding experience is a second area. And finally, the third one is we referred to this earlier on, is how can we take the information that's coming out of TaskFeed and use it in the wider decision making? So how can we build that, for example, into things such as a risk analysis on the account? How can we start looking at that information in association with usage data and behavioral data for that customer to try and power some more strategic level decisions about who are the clients we need to focus on? Who are the clients who are good for us? How does that help lifetime value for those clients? Is this a profitable client? And so that third level is becoming more and more important over time, is that as we then use some of our strategic decision-making tools using the TaskFeed data.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I think when you get to a certain size and scale, and you know, it doesn't matter whether you've got 50 customers, 100 customers, or 1,000 customers, I think there's almost like those phantom customers that you have. Like there's the ones that everyone knows and they're the strategic or the key accounts. There's maybe some of the ones that are a lot smaller and perhaps it is much more churny. Maybe it's your SMB, maybe it's much more transactional business. But there's always this sort of proportion of customers that for whatever reason, you know, whether it's people in the business or I hear it all the time, it's like, we just don't know enough about these customers. Maybe they're quiet, maybe there was a change in leadership, whatever it may be. And so I think what was really interesting speaking to you before was this idea of like, how do we introduce proactivity into our own CSM community so we're engaging and spending the right amount of effort with the right clients at the right time?
One of the areas that we've got most interest now is our predictive risk model that we've had our real techie nerds on the analyst side build. Okay. And what they're using there is using behavioral data and machine learning to go and look at the risk of a particular client staying with us or leaving us. And this is bringing together an awful lot of information, including information on the onboarding, to build that into the model. So we're looking at customers who churn, and from that, we're learning, well, what were the behavioral things that we can take out of that, maybe apply to other customers? So things such as this correlation we mentioned between onboarding time and likelihood to churn.
Yeah.
How important is that? How important is that compared to other factors? So this is where it becomes really, really powerful, in that it's then powering our ability to say, we really need to go and do some more work with these customers here because of X, Y, and Z happening. And this is where we need to have the conversation, because there's so many things you can have a conversation with a customer on. This is what we need to do. Do we need to fix something in the product? Do we need to do some more training with them? Do we need to make sure that we give them some care and attention and contact them more regularly? Do we need to get more executive alignment with them? So the predictive risk model is really the final outcome of a lot of the data that we're collecting and using machine learning to then power the conversations and the programs that we're going to have with those customers. Ideally, some of those things we want to power through automation. We want to power Gainsight through contacts through Gainsight. We want to power marketing programs through the learning that we've got through the predictive model.
Right, that's really interesting. I'd heard this from another customer where they thought about it in terms of thresholds. So they had, if we can deliver within X amount of time, then we know that that's an acceptable threshold for customers of a certain size that are generating a certain amount of value from our product or service, right? So for example, if it takes the client 4 months to get up and running, and for others that might be a really long period of time, but for this particular customer segment where we're generating such value in the next 8 months between, when they've started getting value from the service and their renewal day, we're absolutely confident about that customer, returning to us or remaining with us for the duration. Because of the link between the value that's created at the end of that onboarding journey. Now, one of the things we talked about previously was, because a lot, if I understood correctly, sometimes it's like the amount of spend that's actually going through your product has a link also to value.
So yes, it does. Yeah, it's what we refer to as a spend factor, which is a comparison between how much do you spend on Procurify, how much you spend a year is, and how much are you actually putting through the platform. So if you're spending, say, $20,000 on a Procurify solution, but you're putting through $1 billion of spend, then it's a very, very high factor there. And a lot of the chances are you're getting very, very good value. But if you're spending $20,000 and you're only putting through something like $100,000 of spend through expenses, there's not a lot of value there. So there's a relationship between how much you put through the platform and what you're spending. And so what we try to do is look at that spend factor, and we look at other behaviors to try to work out, well, is this customer in a position where they're actually getting value? And can we feedback that to the customer to ensure that they understand, hey, this is the kind of value that you're getting from our solution. Compare what you're spending to what you're putting through the solution.
Yeah. So when you think about that, if I understand correctly, so the onboarding piece is managed as a part of the CSM's role, correct? In conjunction with the professional services team. So there's a proportion of the CSM's time that would go into onboarding, correct?
Correct. And as part of the onboarding, then one of the nice things about TaskFeed is that we can devolve the responsibility during part of, so some of the actions that take place are done by the CSM. Some of them are done by the professional services consultant. So we share those around, which is actually very good, because it means that you can get a wider picture of what's actually happening and you've got some accountability.
Sure. Because if you're getting that time back, right? So if things are fundamentally more organized, how are you guys also looking at how you invest in the team right now in terms of their learning and their development and their customer acumen or their business acumen within specific industry verticals where you are seeing more demand? What are you doing outside of more of the process stuff around potentially like their skills, their knowledge? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a big demand on our customer success team, who are relatively young. They've not had some of them have not had a vast amount of experience in customer success. So suddenly they've got an awful lot of expectation on their shoulders. So we're having to do an awful lot of development work with them to help prime them with the conversations that they need to have with the clients. Right. So depending on the scenario of the clients, what are the conversations that you should be having with them? If, for example, they're going through a poor onboarding experience, well, how do you have that conversation? What do you say to them? Yeah. If they're going live and they're suddenly seeing that a whole batch of users have stopped using the product over the last 10 days or whatever, what do you say? What's the conversation? It's not just saying, by the way, call this customer. You've got to know what to say. So we're doing an awful lot of work in developing playbooks and conversations that you should be having with your clients at this particular time. And of course, the extra thing that's on top of that is, well, let's go and look at what the sector that they're in. You know, the reason they're dropping off in terms of their usage might be that all their employees have been laid off. Well, that's a very different conversation than, all their employees are still there, but they don't like the design of the UX, and they find it difficult to submit their expenses. That's a very different conversation to have. So I think that you're right, that you can provide all the data and the process in the world, but in the end, somebody's got to speak to that customer and have a coherent, sensible conversation with that customer and know what to say at the right time. And I think that that's where an awful lot of development work is going to have to take place for any CS organization now, is to have how to have those real human conversations that are not just, oh, here's a number, let's talk about it.
Yeah. There's a bit of a misconception that there's kind of like the situation that we're all going through, pre-COVID-19, the various lockdowns or restrictions that are in place, and then kind of this world that goes back to normal. And I think people are realizing, like, what is that normal, you know, really going to be for me, our business, our customers, all of these different types of things. And particularly across different generations of staff, there's very different perspectives on that because they've never been through something like this. And I think that the ability, like you say, for people to have like very, like, be a human first, you know, so we have in our business, if a customer comes to us and there's an issue, you know, there might be an issue with the renewal. Is it actually an issue with regards to the renewal and our product? Or is it an issue due to the fact that, you know, 90% of their staff is furloughed, or that they're in an industry where they've got a huge amount of exposure? We've got, you know, some customers that are working in the events sector and they provide technology to events and there's no events. I mean, these are just, you know, very uncertain times. I mean, how do you, is there a playbook for being human, or is it training? Is it coaching? Is it the conversations that you have internally?
Yeah. This is really down to the development within the team itself. You know, we're very much relying on the senior members of the team to be mentoring the less senior folks. But we've always tried to bring people on board who've got that empathy with the client. So I think selecting the right people in customer success is a start. We just have to arm them with different conversations now. It's not just enough to have a conversation with another human being, which is great. In fact, a lot of our customers, they're saying, well, they love speaking to us right now because they're isolated at home. They want to speak to people. And they're just, oh, thank God you called me. I can speak to someone. Which is great. But how do you then have those conversations to try to go and work out where the value is that you can provide to that customer right now? And that value might be very different than what it was a few weeks ago. So, for example, with some customers, the value might be, well, the expectation was always that you were going to do a train-the-trainer approach, and you were always going to bring on you know, your folks within the 3-week time period, but suddenly you can't do that anymore because your resources are elsewhere. Well, what can we do to try and get through that? Can we help you with that user acceptance train? Maybe we'll just invest some of our hours and we'll spend that time to help you along. So we're seeing a lot of that where we're trying to say, look, what would you really need to help you move this project along and be successful? First of all, is there anything we can do? And if we can do, well, let's talk candidly about it. And if we need to invest some more time, some more hours, then we'll do that. I think that's been the ability to open up those conversations and to empower the customer success managers to have those conversations and to offer something that normally we wouldn't necessarily do. We say, okay, hold on, this this is what we said. Yeah, you were going to do train the trainer. You know, you didn't want to invest in time. Yeah, okay, we'll do that. Maybe you can't do the technical setup that we thought you were going to have to do. Maybe we'll get on, we'll get online. We'll help you with the technical setup. We'll import this data for you. So I think that being very flexible there and offering what we can to help those customers through is really paying dividends right now. So even if a customer is under threat and they say, well, we've got a problem here. I'm being asked by my CFO to cut all this expenditure. Well, let's make it as easy as possible for you to go and prove the value and to say, no, we shouldn't be cutting this. This is actually a value to us in the organization.
Yeah, there's a lot of SaaS businesses thinking very differently about professional services and its role in annual recurring revenue, in value creation, and how it needs to be deployed. So just want to look at a few kind of tips for customers, because I know you kindly have prepped a few slides, I think. So it'd be great. You talked a little bit about how you're aggregating this data into Salesforce. It'd be awesome to see, if you don't mind sharing, how are you using TaskFeed? Give us some examples of what are some of the things that you're doing that you think are helping you and that could well be of help to some of our other customers as well.
Sure. Well, one of the things that we were very keen on right from the beginning was capturing more information that would help us to make better decisions later on. And we referred to this earlier on around delays.
Yeah.
So because one of the focuses was bringing down the time to go live, we determined that we really needed to understand why these projects being delayed. So we've made it mandatory right now that every time a task within the system is lengthened more than it should be, that the PSC has to say, well, why is it delayed? And we've got like a pick list of delay reasons and with some comments and so on. So that's really helping us now to make that. That's one area that we worked on.
What have you found, out of curiosity, what have you found in terms of like, what are some of the delays that were maybe surprising to you?
An awful lot of customer delays.
Okay.
Where the customers were not able to meet the agreed time schedule that they'd set up at the beginning of the project. Said, okay, yeah, sorry, I can't complete the user acceptance testing because I've got to do this instead. Yep. Or suddenly I've got another emergency which is taking my time up. So we're seeing a lot of customer delays. And so what that's led us to do now is, having looked at the pattern of that, is that we've created some new resources for customers to allow them to do some of those things a little bit faster. So for example, we're making changes in the product that would allow some of those tasks to be more automated and to run more quickly. So that's feeding directly back into the product management team, who are then changing the product to hopefully then improve the onboarding experience. So that's already happening. So that's being clear. The other thing is that we've been seeing are delays usually related to customization.
Yeah.
So when the customer has come later partway through the project, and it's kind of scope creeping away, you know, say, okay, well, actually, no, we need to report on this. Ah, right. Well, we didn't plan that. We need to now go back. We need to do some extra work here. So there's kind of changes in scope. So those are the ones that we're really seeing. Either we need to do a better job in scoping, and we're asking more of those questions up front, and that's happening, or we're changing the product to cut down on some of those delays. So this is one of the things that we really focused on. Another area we focused on was for everybody in the organization to understand where that customer was in that onboarding. Because we've got an awful lot of things that happen around the customer. So for example, we do an awful lot of things like CTAs, where we send things out to the customer on an automated basis. We also do things like, as most software companies do things like quarterly business reviews or annual business reviews with the customer. And we have renewal cycles coming up with the customer. Lots of communications that are triggered by data. Mm-hmm. But of course, if they're not fully onboarded, you need to understand, well, we may want to be communicating to people in a very different way.
Yeah.
So we wanted to bring a lot of the summary information that's coming out of TaskFeed into the account level and to expose that to tools such as Gainsight and Marketo and to some of the other people running programs, to ensure that we would either include that client in the program or exclude clients from those programs. So this is really to improve the way we communicate with our customers by looking at what's happening. And that would include things such as, have they gone live yet? Is there a variance? Are they late? How long have they been live for? Okay, yeah. So all those kind of things would feed in. So I think that's the second area that I would say has been something we built on top of, is feeding that data back into the account level and exposing that data to the wider set of processes that we have across sales and marketing.
Yeah. I mean, I think we as vendors want to know where we are in a process with a client, but I think more now than ever, the customer wants to know where are they in that journey as well.
This is an interesting one around the customers. This is something that we're looking at seriously now, is how do we expose some of that information to our customers?
Yeah.
Because clearly we communicate with them on a regular basis. Most of that communication is via email, or it's via phone, or it's over Zoom. But how can we make that even more efficient by exposing that data? So that's something that's kind of on our roadmap right now, is to take advantage of some of the features within TaskFeed to bring our customers into the project and have greater visibility.
So sharing the project plan via the board sharing and maybe using...
Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And seeing where we can incorporate that in some of the other communications that we have with the customer.
Yeah. We're increasingly now seeing much more demand for that from the client. I think now you've got there's also ways to, with Salesforce, you know, you can automate. We've got customers that are automating sending out surveys after particular parts of onboarding journeys, so like NPS surveys. In the way that we use it internally, where you know, the kickoff meeting, the plan gets sent, and the person can book their meeting through the project plan there and then, right? They can go in and click on a link and book into the CSM's diary straight away. So I think there's just all of those little tweaks that, again, are just getting you that time back. And it may not be that, you know, it's for some companies, I think it's not always a good idea that they want to go from delivering it in 30 days to 25. 30 days might just be great, but if you've got more time outside of, you know, the effort that you're working in terms of onboarding, in terms of internal stuff, in terms of strategizing, if you can have more time back to spend it thinking about how you're going to add value to a customer, or preparing better for a meeting, or ensuring that your communications is more human-led and sensitive to the environment that we're all working in, that in and of itself is kind of what customer success is all about.
I'd agree. I think that it's from my perspective, from the revenue operations perspective, this seamless join between what's happening in your customer success team, within your sales team, within your marketing team, within your finance team, this is all one. Yeah. And my perspective is that you don't look at those things in isolation. You go and look at, this is a way that we need to treat our customers, either new customers or potential customers, or customers who've been with you for a long time. What's the best way of serving those? And you build an environment and a set of processes and tools that allow you to make that happen. Mm-hmm. And so this is why TaskFeed is one of those missing links that we've had before. Is that we were missing that link between selling a solution and delivering value to the customer. And this is the missing link that allows us to deliver that. And once we've delivered that, to be able to say, well, how can we deliver it better? Do we deliver it better through better process? Do we deliver it better by making changes in the product? Do we deliver it better by having better relationships? How do we do that? So this is where I think the whole thing is coming together, and that customer success should be seen as an arm of the rest of the organization. It's not separate. It is part of the same organization.
Yeah. And customer success starts with customer onboarding, as we like to say here. Julian, really fantastic talking to you. Thank you ever so much for taking the time. Just a load of really useful insights across, I think, kind of process issues, cultural issues, you know, thinking smartly with data, the systems that you're using, you know, the dealing with the changes in demand and the situation that we're all working in. So greatly appreciate it. And we hopefully will get you on this again at some point in the future as well.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Jonathan. Thanks for your time. It's been a pleasure being with you, and I hope that the rest of your clients find some nuggets of information useful in all of this. So I'd say goodbye for now.
Yeah. Thanks ever so much, Julian. Cheers. Bye-bye.